You're listening to the Colts Blue Zone Podcast with Mike Chappell and Dave Griffiths.
Inside the Fox 59 CBS 4 podcast studio, welcome to the Colts Blue Zone Podcast. Alongside Mike Chappell and Matt Adams, I'm Dave Griffiths. So glad to have you along for the ride as we are now in April, ladies and gentlemen, the month of the NFL draft, building toward the future.
3 weeks tomorrow, right?
How about that? 3 weeks from tomorrow. So just a couple more Colts Blue Zone podcasts before then. And we will, of course, dive head first into a lot more draft coverage in the future. But today, it's quite a coincidental. We were planning on talking about AFC South moves in free agency anyway. And a rather large bomb was dropped earlier today.
Or dump job.
Yes.
If I look at it as a dump job by Buffalo.
Uh-huh. Just get rid of
this burr in my butt.
Uh-huh. And then move on and see if they can do better without him. And much to the Texans' fancy, somebody who is very, very productive in his past years in the NFL was available. So we'll discuss that in a minute. But we are going to begin with just some sad news from the Colts world in the NFL. That former cornerback Vontae Davis for the team was found dead in his grandmother's home in Florida. No foul play suspected. Police have not released details of all the incidents, however. Davis was 35 years old. He played for the Colts from 2012 through 2017. He made the Pro Bowl twice when he was here. And he's very famous for being acquired, how the Colts got him from the Dolphins.
Hard Knocks, right?
Yes, it was a Hard Knocks trade, and he was in the room. I believe it was Mike Tannenbaum was the GM. I don't know.
Was he sitting with the coach though? I can't remember what it was.
I thought it was the GM, okay, but it might have been the coach. I could be wrong, but anyway, that's a big moment in his career nationally. Folks here in Indy will remember him as. He had some tremendous years.
2 or 3 years, he was one of the league's best corners, without question.
Easily. And that's when I got here, at the end of 2014. And it was either 2015 or 2016. He went through an entire season, and he didn't allow a touchdown.
25 straight games.
That was quite a few. And he was elite in every sense of the word. A great cornerback. And was very important to those Chuck Pagano defenses that were playoff teams. A couple of them made runs in the playoffs deep to the AFC championship. But Vontae Davis found dead in his grandmother's home in Florida.
Yeah, he was a really quiet guy, pleasurable guy to talk with, but just quiet. I don't say a loner, but a lot of times he's at his locker eating his lunch in his styrofoam, plate, whatever, and just really good. It ended bad here in 16 or 17, whatever year it was. Where he had injuries and he was benched, and he kept saying, "No, Mike, I've got a groin injury." And the team said, "No, you're going to play." And then he went and had groin surgery, and they cut him the next day. So there was a disconnect there. But when he was on, he was as good a corner as the Colts have had. I've seen people say that he was the best corner they've ever had. I would argue that to some level. Just Gerard Powers was really, really good. Ray Buchanan back in the day was really, really good. But that's not to discredit what Vontae was here at all, because his career took off after the trade.
Yeah, he was at least in the handful of players who were in that discussion
as
the best ever, that you could make a good argument for here in Indianapolis, that he was the best cornerback this franchise had ever had, certainly from the Indianapolis era. But Jim Irsay tweeted out, "Extremely saddened to hear of the passing of Vontae Davis, a great guy, teammate, player. My prayers to Vontae's family." I echo a lot of the sentiments the chap said there, Matt, that he was quiet in the locker room, but he was a great interview. He had a awesome smile, lit up the room.
That high pitch voice.
It was a slightly higher pitched voice than you would expect from a man
of
his stature.
And the more excited he got, the higher it went.
Yes, it was. But he's a guy that Colts fans missed when he left, because there hasn't been that one outside corner, save maybe the year of Stephon Gilmore, that has really been able to fill the shoes as a guy that you don't have to worry about that side of the field.
Right, I got it.
Yeah, I just remember him being an elite cornerback playing at a high level for the Colts. And I obviously was not in the locker room engaging, but it's sort of ironic that a guy that is a good soundbite, but mostly quiet and kind of mild-tempered, is kind of known nationally for Hard Knocks when he got sent to the Colts.
Well, and then how the career ended.
And then how he ended his career, in which he was inactive, I think, the first game against Buffalo in week one. Then week two, he came out, he played a half, and then he was just like, I think I'm done with football. And that's how a lot of people remember
him. He changed clothes and drove off.
Yep. He was gone. See you later. All done.
And there was a lot of initial confusion. And right. It, you know, like, well, maybe he's just done for a little while, and then he was done.
Yeah. So he was a different bird in some right. aspects of many NFL players with those two instances of being traded and saying, I have to call my grandma. And from that, like, it, from that and from our discussions, you knew his grandmother was an important person in right. his life that raised him, and to be found dead in her home. Like, it's just heartbreaking for her, for the family, for his friends, and very ancillarily for us, for a guy that we Correct. Just enjoyed spending some time with every now and then when we were trying to get one or two tidbits about, you know, facing the Jacksonville Jaguars wide receiving corps. So all the best to his family, his friends, all the people who he called close, and our thoughts, our prayers.
Brother Vern.
Yes, his brother Vern as well. And so all the best to them. So now we move on to more of the meat and potatoes of this discussion today, and that is kind of talking about the AFC South and some more Colts moves as well in free agency. But the biggest move by far that we can discuss today is an acquisition made by the Houston Texans, and that is bringing in wide receiver Stephon Diggs. They're making a trade with the Bills, and the deal sends a 2025 second round pick to Buffalo, and. I got a ring notification on my phone. It's like it's not a normal notification. It was like a weird one. So anyway, my apologies. Stephon Diggs going to the Houston Texans for a 2025 second round pick. And the Bills are also giving up a 2025 fifth rounder and a 2024 sixth rounder. And those details coming via Ian Rappaport, Adam Schefter as well. So it's not even a simple pick swap, second round pick. It's the Texans get a fifth round pick, a sixth round pick, and Stephon Diggs.
So it's a devalued second round pick.
It is, very much so. And
The
Bills dumped him.
They dumped him.
And you think there's no other way to describe this from Buffalo's perspective.
I put a couple of questions on Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it, and it appears that the Bills just got tired of the drama. There was some tweet last night or something where Diggs put, There was a question: Is the reason Josh Allen is so good, is it because of Stephon Diggs? And people said no. And I guess he tweeted, "Are you sure?
Yeah, y'all sure?" Something right. along those lines.
But that's people who think that's what sparked this trade. You don't do a trade of this magnitude overnight. This has been building. But to think that he's 31, he's signed through three more years, 27, I think it is. And he's only guaranteed money through 25, so he's guaranteed this year, next year. So it's an instant addition of a number one receiver in an offense that was already mm-hmm. off the charts good. I think this is one where the team just said, we're done with it. And this is a Buffalo team that's been knocking on the door. You talk about a team in transition with a great quarterback. Buffalo Bills, you know, now there's a question is who's the team to beat in the AFC East? It's probably not Buffalo right now.
Yeah, I think the Dolphins have certainly risen over the last year or two.
The
Jets, of course, if Aaron Rodgers is healthy, who knows?
Kind of a big if.
But a very, very big
very
if.
Very big if.
Yes.
But still, I mean, you could have a very good Jets team as well. So that division is definitely changing. And then the Bills, I mean, this just to go to Mike's point, they will take a dead cap hit on this mm-hmm. of more than $31 million for this trade just to get rid of Diggs. They've also gotten rid of some of their core players, Tre'Davious White, the cornerback, Jordan Poyer, Mitch Morse, their center, who I believe is now in Jacksonville, Gabe Davis, who was kind of the Batman, Robin to the Batman there of Diggs, and Leonard Floyd as well. So because they've gotten themselves in some cap situations and that sort of thing. So just a lot of change in Buffalo.
People think the cap, and I'm one of them, you can do funny things with the cap. You can. But at some point, you have to account for money paid.
The bill comes due.
It does. Denver with Russell Wilson. You got rid of him. Of course you did. But you've got $80 million over this year, next year to take care of. It's really kind of crazy how, you know, right now Houston has won the offseason Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
Seldom does that translate into the regular season Super Bowl.
Right, you are. So I'll say that. Like, there's a lot of Colts fans out there.
Zaire Franklin already put that out there. So I guess they won the offseason Super Bowl.
I guess so. And maybe you want them to win the offseason Super Bowl just because of the history of teams that, that tend to do that.
Well, they're going from the little team that might be pretty interesting last year to on everybody's radar now.
Oh, shoot.
Big time.
Yeah.
So we'll see how that team handles that. They might do very well, because I thought before these offseason moves, Houston was pretty good. Mm-hmm. They had the right people in the right places, young. So they've only – all they've done is yes on paper, but what you see what they've done, they've added impact players to an already pretty good defense or a pretty good team.
Yeah, on both sides of the ball. And we'll discuss that in a second. Diggs' usage was a little bit down last year, but it was still at the level of 100 catches, 107 specifically, for 1,183 yards and 8 touchdowns. So, I mean, if you're arguing, like, is Josh Allen only good because Stephon Diggs, like – no, but Josh Allen is at the level he is because of Stephon Diggs.
They went out to get Diggs 4 years ago to make Josh Allen that much better.
Right, and he absolutely helped. He made him better. He still makes him better.
You think Josh Allen is happy or PO'd?
I think he's PO'd. Like, I think he'd rather deal
with
the headache.
Until he sees what you get in the draft, but I'd rather have a proven 30-year-old Pro Bowler.
Yeah.
Than a kid coming out of somewhere that's got great potential.
Even if, like, they're picking later in the first round, I assume. I don't think they've traded away their first round pick. Like, you can still get, like, an Adonai Mitchell maybe late there. If Brian Thomas from LSU falls, I think they'd be ecstatic with that. Xavier Worthy from Texas as well. Like, there are guys down there, Keon Coleman of Florida State, if you're in love with him. Like, Ladd McConkey from Georgia. There are guys. It seems like this is a deep wide receiver draft. But at the end of the day, who do you want? Do you want 30-year-old Stephon Diggs, or do you want like a 22-year-old rookie that you're trying to break in? And if you're talking 5 years down the road, you probably want the rookie. But if you're talking now, where your window is open with Buffalo, when you have Josh Allen as your quarterback in his best years right now as he's playing, how old is Josh Allen now? 27, maybe?
Probably.
Right around that range. I don't know exactly, but like these next 5 years for him are his most important, probably
the
best years of his
career. The window's always open when you have him.
And especially with him younger in his career, because right. He takes more hits. You don't expect him to be the Tom Brady guy who's playing till he's 45. You expect him to be closer to the Cam Newton guy, although not exactly that, where there's a cliff eventually, and the second you hit it, you are not the same guy anymore, and as a team, your window is closed. So with quarterbacks like that, you have to take advantage of their time, and I say this kind of wink, wink, nudge, nudge here talking to an Indianapolis Colts audience that's going to come eventually. There is a cliff that the Buffalo Bills are going to hit with Josh Allen eventually, and I don't know how many years it's going to take them to get there. But right now, they kind of traded away a guy who could be a very big impact player for them right now to try to look down the road. And they're just hopeful that looking down the road is not going to be what crimples their chances to win a Super Bowl in the Josh Allen era.
He's not going to change the way he plays. If he was going to change the way he was going to play, he would have done it by now. This is who he is. That's the argument that the Colts fans need to accept. The fact is, yes, there are things that Richardson can do to avoid contact and all that, but this is who he is. Running is part of his game. It's the same with what Luck ran into. Now, Luck was compromised by really poor protection, but he didn't help himself. I mean, he tried to change a little bit, but you are who you are. When it really gets going in the fourth quarter and it's third and seven, you are who you are. And that's what you sign up for. But, yeah, the window's always open when you've got a Josh Allen because he's that good. But the longer you go into his career, the roster overturns and you've got to replace people, which is harder to do because his cap number is going to be $40, $50 million moving forward.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, they're in a different phase of building a team when you have a cap number like that. They're not in the same place as a team like the Texans, Titans, or the Colts specifically right now in the
AFC
South.
Rookie quarterback contracts.
Exactly. The availability or the possibility to go out and make big additions, even if your general manager decides not to, which I'm sure we'll discuss a little bit here as we look around the AFC South. And we might as well begin with the Houston Texans because they have been the ones that have been making headlines, not just in the division, but really across the NFL about making big impact signings to put on this team and try to get better. Already a division champion last year. They're not content with bringing back what they have. Because, like you said, Chap, we thought that was a pretty good team last year. They won the division last year. They had some pretty darn good players last year. But what they saw was last year to next year, every team you expect to get, you want to get a little bit better if you bring back the entire crew, especially if it's a young crew. You expect it to take a step forward. And maybe that's what Chris Ballard wants to see. Everyone take a small step forward. But the Texans are getting that too. You know, they get the small step forward with their guys that they're already bringing back. And they go out and they sign one of the top five pass rushers of the past 5 years in Danielle Hunter. Like, he's not a guy that gets brought up as much as the Bosas or...
He just 12, 13, 14 sacks.
Exactly. He just goes out and gets 12, 14 sacks and calls it a dang day. So Danielle Hunter, they bring him in after Jonathan Grenard goes to the Vikings, to be fair. So they lose a guy who was pretty darn good for them getting after the quarterback last year. They traded a seventh-round pick for Joe Mixon.
I think that's a huge pickup for them, for mm-hmm. a seventh-round pick especially.
The only argument I've got there is then they gave him a $27 million contract. Mm-hmm. I might not have done that.
Yeah, that's probably true.
And here's the deal, though. Your quarterback is on the rookie salary, so you can afford it right now. So yes, maybe if you're the Cincinnati Bengals, you don't want to pay $27 million to Joe Mixon. But right now...
Yeah, you do get
if
that,
you're the Houston Texans,
yeah, you get that little kind of an inflationary effect on the other salaries because you can absorb it.
Yes, you can absorb it, and he's a guy that is a good out of the backfield running back. Colts saw that just last year with a couple of different guys, and he was one of them that did some pretty good damage to them coming down the stretch last year, running back specifically. So he's a guy that is going to make C.J. Stroud better. So the $27 million you're paying him. It's in part for him.
It's probably a 2-year deal.
It could be, yeah.
Maybe you walk away after next year.
And also, it's in part to C.J. Stroud, to make him better. You're paying money to get your quarterback better, which, again, is something that a lot of Colts fans were hoping and expecting Chris Ballard to do, maybe paying some money to somebody, wide receiver, tight end, in free agency, to bring in and try to make Anthony Richardson better. And he would argue that he did that with Michael Pittman Jr., and I think the argument right back in his face is that, well, Michael Pittman Jr. was here last year, too. So that's not really, in terms of taking a step forward as a team, anything. It's like just taking the next step, which every team does in the offseason. So the Texans have had a very, very different approach to free agency. And beyond these guys, you also signed DeNico Autry, who we have joked is just one AFC South team away from the cycle. Like,
he's still a good player.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know how old he is. He's definitely in his 30s by now.
He's probably 32.
Yeah, but at defensive end, you have a couple good years still at 32, and especially if you're used
he's
in a limited
third
role.
Guy.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so he's playing behind Hunter and Will Anderson.
So exactly. So he's playing what, 30-40% of defensive snaps, and for a guy that gets 7-8 sacks a year.
And if he's your third guy on third down. He's going to get singled up, and he's really good at beating one-on-ones.
Yep, and at this point in your career, you should be. Like, you should be the technical genius, the technical marvel. Like, you can't do – I'm not as good as I once was, but I'm as good once
But I'm better
as
than
I ever
your fourth offensive lineman or
exactly.
pass protector.
Right, completely. So that's a –
I like what they've done. I like where they are.
You would think that's a good addition. They signed linebacker Azeez Al-Shaair away from the Titans, one of the players on the Titans who had a pretty good season last year. They re-signed Titans. End Dalton Schultz, Noah Brown, kicker Kyneemi Fairbairn, and like we said earlier, acquired Stephon Diggs in a trade. So it's really for the Texans, they lose Jonathan Grenard, which absolutely is a hit. But when you lose a guy and then you bring in a Danielle Hunter, who, like I said, is a top five pass rusher over the past five years.
And they paid for it.
Yes, they did. They absolutely paid for it, and they paid in guaranteed money, 48 of the $49 million in that contract, guaranteed.
Someone will need to explain that $1 million to us.
Somebody's just trying to troll us, I think, at the end of the day, and it's working very well.
There's probably a reason for it, and I have no clue what it is.
Yeah, I'm sure there is, and you'd have to read deep into the cap.
We're not going to give total guaranteed contracts, okay.
Right, okay, fine, fair enough. Congratulations, good for you. But Chap, I don't think that when you look at how the Titans, the Texans rather, have approached this free agency, and really some of what the Titans, will get into more of them too. Like they saw where they were last year. They saw the players they had. And in spite of having young players who they like,
at impact positions,
like a Nico Collins, a Tank Dell, a Will Anderson, whatever you have, some of their cornerbacks that are young. Stingley, is he with? No, wait. I forget his name. Anyway, I'll look it up in a second. But the young players they have at impact positions, they saw what they had. They were not content to bring back what they had. They said, even though we won the division last year, our sights are set higher for next year.
Yeah, I think this is a little different than some off seasons where teams go heavy in free agency to build a team. For the most part, what these guys have done is complemented what they already had. And that's the way you want to do it. You want Daniel Hunter to come in and get you 12 or 14 sacks, but you've already got the guy there. So what they've done is they're not rebuilding their roster. They're just supplementing their roster.
Yeah. Was I right, Matt?
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
yep,
good.
Yep.
Thank heavens.
it's always nice, isn't it?
Exactly. I think I remember there's a Desmond King also is there, is their slot corner as well. Derek Stingley and Desmond King.
And you get pass rush, then your corners are better.
Yeah.
Just because you get a pass rush.
Yep, exactly. And your pass rush gets better if you have good corners. And Stingley's a pretty good corner.
I'd rather have a really good pass rush and get by with mediocre is a bad word. Average corners.
Because mediocre guys can always get beat. It doesn't matter.
Again,
right.
Average, you can do okay. Like, you can hold your own.
You just can't spend your money everywhere. And
right.
you've got to kind of pick, like, this is where we're going to concentrate our finances. And we're just going to have to make do at this other position. So
right.
It's like
every team
makes
do somewhere.
Somewhere. You got to.
And even the Texans who saw that their defensive line was pretty darn good last year. And hey, you lose Jonathan Greenard. So, hey, if we want to be at that level or better, we need to really make a big splash. And they did that with Danielle Hunter. They said, hey, our offense is pretty good. We have some good wide receivers out there. Running back was a weakness last year, obviously, for
no
them.
No longer.
So no longer is. They still have the wide receivers. They still have the tight end. So it's a lot of the same players that C.J. Stroud will be throwing to, and who knows what they use their first-round pick for, a second-round pick.
And there's no reason to expect C.J. Stroud to regress.
No.
Why would you? I mean, well, from what we saw, I mean, he didn't just pull things out of his hat and make plays. He played the position like he had been there 2 or 3 years. So anyone expecting, they did all this, but the quarterback's going to retreat. There's no signs of that.
No, I've never been more wrong on a player than I have about C.J. Stroud, to be honest. I mean, maybe some people would think I was more wrong about another quarterback who used to play here in Indianapolis.
He just got signed.
But he did. How about that?
I can't believe that's not on this list.
Right? I know.
I forgot about it.
Who put this list? Have we mentioned? I'm not going to mention his name.
Oh, I will, since we'll get to it.
Okay.
That's a deep tease. We'll get to that story for sure. More free agency, not AFC South, but AFC. But anyway, I don't think I've ever been more wrong about a player coming out of college than I was about C.J. Stroud. I'll say that, because I did not see. Like, I just saw so much talent that he had around him in Ohio State, and didn't see.
He was just driving the car.
Exactly. And that's what I thought it was. And it was a lot more than that, obviously. It was a lot more than that.
I mean, unfortunately, Dave, to your point, you weren't the only one thinking that way.
Thank you, Matt. I appreciate that.
Because just the Ohio State quarterbacks that we've seen come out in the last decade have not had a ton of NFL success.
So I was in the boat of, hey, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me.
Now,
I will say
I was big on C.J. Stroud.
Well, good for you. No,
but,
I'm just kidding.
But they're always in the back of your mind is you think about those Ohio State quarterbacks that have not had, that have been great at Ohio State, but once they get to that next level, it's just not there. There's just something missing, and he was able to buck the trend.
Nothing missing in his rookie year, that's for sure, and the Texans want to make him better in 2024. How about the Tennessee Titans? They have their quarterback of the future right now, at least, in Will Levis. This year will probably go a long way to determine whether or not he is the quarterback there for the next 10 years, whether he can take significant steps forward, whether the team is markedly better than it was last year.
And you don't know.
No, we don't. Absolutely, we don't know. Don't know about him. We don't know about Anthony Richardson. We like Anthony Richardson, but and we like a couple things that Will Levis did in his rookie year, but you're right. We don't know right now. And so,
which one do you know more about, Levis or Richardson? Levis, because he played more?
You've got more film and stuff to look at from Levis, but then again, rookie quarterback and all that. And then he was kind of banged up toward the end of the year as well. So
with a team that wasn't playing
With a team that's not very good. So it's hard. It's very hard to judge.
I think that's a good question, and it's very hard to say. That's why I shut up. And I was like, I don't know. I just don't know. But what they did, I do know that they tried to get better around him again. They signed wide receiver Calvin Ridley, who was with the Jacksonville Jaguars last year, had a really good game against the Colts first game last year at Lucas Oil Stadium. If you were at Lucas Oil, you saw him make a couple really important catches late in that game to seal that win. So they also got running back Tony Pollard. Hey, if you're going to lose Derrick Henry, who's been a linchpin of your offense for the past 7 years or however long exactly it's been, you can do a whole lot worse than Tony Pollard because he's a pretty good player. He's the guy that basically kicked Ezekiel Elliott out of Dallas when Zeke was running for 1,200 yards a year.
But then he didn't really measure up.
He did not.
I think there were injury concerns.
There were.
We'll see if Tony Pollard is one of those guys that when you get the chance to be the guy, maybe you prove that you're not the guy.
Right.
We'll see.
Mm-hmm.
And they've also got the younger Tajay Spears,
right.
I believe. So they kind of have that 1-2 punch change-up guy as well.
Lightning, as I think they've been dubbed right now, because they're both kind of the smaller, more shifty type of back. Just don't call them gadget guys, or else you might hear it from them. They signed Mason Rudolph to be their backup quarterback, who's been the backup in Pittsburgh for a good amount of time.
You could do
That's
worse.
Fine. Yeah, you can do a whole lot worse than Mason Rudolph. He's been in the league for a good amount of time, like I said, and is a fine. He's a fine back. He's not. I don't think I'd put him as a great backup quarterback, but he's probably in the middle.
Got a team to the playoffs.
Exactly. Yeah, he did. So there you go. Center Lloyd Cushenberry comes in to the team. Cornerback Chidobe Awuzie. And also traded for another cornerback in a young Legarius Sneed, or 29-year-old Legarius Sneed, I think, by this time the season starts. So a couple of the bigger names, I mean, Calvin Ridley, Tony Pollard, and Legarius Sneed all expect to be pretty heavy contributors next year to a team that Chap really wasn't very good last year, but they also see that they have some cap flexibility to work with and are not necessarily at the point where the Colts were this year to re-sign some of their players. They could go out and spend some money elsewhere, and they did that trying to improve a couple places around their quarterback and also on the other side of the ball in the secondary.
They did what a lot of teams do and what the Colts did back in the 2000s with Pulley and Manning. You try to squeeze every ounce out of the talent you have. The Colts did that with the Peyton years, and then when it ended, it was awful with the injury. And the Titans sort of did that with Henry and Ryan Tannehill. I mean, it's really crazy how much success Tennessee had with those guys and got nothing out of it. I mean, they were number one seed twice, I think. Didn't they get to the AFC title game once? I believe it was. But they're in whatever you want to phrase it, a rebuild is not a total reboot, I don't think, but you know, new coach and all this, so yeah.
It's not 2011 Colts right now.
That was a do-over.
Right, there's not too many that are like that.
But the two
fair.
Names we've talked about, a reason that the Colts fan base is up in arms are Danielle Hunter and Legarius Sneed.
Yep,
two guys that at some level, the Colts they tried to sign, they thought they had a really good chance at Hunter. From what I've been told, they offered Hunter more than Houston did. I'm sure they didn't offer him $48 million guaranteed, which is
that's a big difference.
That's all that matters.
You say it all the time, Chap, on this pod. The guaranteed money. Exactly.
Get what you can.
So they could have offered him $52 million, but if only $26
million
of it's
correct. Guaranteed. Correct. Where
are you going to go?
Yeah. I'll go to Siberia for that extra $27 exactly. million. Dollars. So and then to not get Sneed. And I really don't know how far down the line that went. I think they did balk. They would have balked at, what do you get, $19 million?
Yep, $19 a year for 3 years, 4 years.
For you know, here we are, we're sort of knocking a player that the Colts didn't get, who's not been to the Pro Bowl yet. It's a lot of money for a non-Pro Bowl player, knowing how easy it is to make the Pro Bowl.
I'll say this, though. Anthony Costanzo never made a Pro Bowl in his 10 years.
It's
you
a
know?
Good, great point.
And boy, you'd great sure point. Like to have a guy like him on your team.
I agree. So, but those are the two birds that really rub the Colts fan base, and I understand that.
Yep.
So, and once we get through Jacksonville, we can talk about this offseason and season is going to be about what's the best way of building a contender.
Mm-hmm.
Is it going out and adding you know, major players at major prices, or is it re-signing your own? And the Colts have done essentially nothing outside the building. They signed two backups, Joe Flacco, who you hope never plays, and Raquan Davis, who is going to be rotational.
You hope plays 30% of the snaps.
Right. So, but it's going to be a forum on how do you do it.
And kind of like I said earlier, there is a specific window to act like the Texans are acting this year. They're in it. The Titans are in it. They went out and signed a couple players, not at the same level as the Texans did. And the Colts are in this window, too. They only have a certain amount of years where they can go out and sign players in this manner. We saw it a couple years ago with Jacksonville. We saw it a couple times over the past decade with Jacksonville.
When they won the offseason Super Bowl.
Exactly. So, you know, when they made it to the AFC Championship game and were one third down and third and 14 stop or whatever it was from keeping the Patriots out of the Super Bowl, who eventually lost that Super Bowl to the Philadelphia Eagles, of course. But nevertheless, you go out the next offseason and you add a bunch of players, and then it did not work. So it's nice to win the offseason Super Bowl, but I don't believe there's a trophy for it, though. No, there is not. They do not hand out trophies for it. Do I look at what the Texans have done? If I was a Colts fan, would I look at what the Texans have done and think, oh, they're not any better? No, I would think they're a whole lot better than what they were last year.
And again, they were pretty good.
Yeah, and they were pretty good last year. And if I'm the Colts, and if I look at what the Colts have done this offseason, do I think that they're a whole lot better next year? No. No, not at all. I don't think they're a whole lot better at all. I think they are better, but what they have that is better than last year, in some ways, it's the same as other teams. Your young players are getting one step better. Okay, congratulations. Everyone gets that. What the Colts will think could put them at a bigger step forward than your average team that just gets their young players a little bit better is where your young players are, like Anthony Richardson, a quarterback, taking a significant step forward, they hope. And also Jonathan Taylor playing
they
a full healthy
hope,
season.
They pray.
Yes, they do. Very much so. But those are the two. And we kind of touched on this before we started this podcast. We knew we'd get to this point that the Colts are placing a lot of their hopes and prayers in the development of Anthony Richardson and the health of Jonathan Taylor to be able to match what these other teams are doing with offseason signings and to be able to compete with them and make the playoffs at the end of the year.
At best, Jonathan Taylor was at full go, I don't know, eight games, maybe. I think he played 11.
And we that's at best.
And we saw when he's good, he's special. But he's a guy, again, that you need the quarterback to – if Richardson's not the guy, then you're dead in the water. If Will Levis isn't the guy, then Houston or then Tennessee is floundering around for another 4 or 5 years. But if he is, you've got to strike now because, again, if it takes him, let's say it takes him 4 years. Well, Jonathan Taylor won't be part of that fourth year. And Quentin Nelson's going to be 4 years. The roster keeps getting older. And this is a very good roster right now. It's solid. It still lacks 2-3 difference makers. It just does. Who's their edge pass rushing difference maker? I don't know. Quitty, I don't see that. I mean, I think he's a solid player. But Michael Pittman, is he when you think of the top 10 game-breaking receivers, with all due respects, he's not one of them. He's really, really good. But he's not that guy that takes the top off. And so, now, Taylor is. Taylor can do that. They need to tie it in like that. But that's what this is about. It's a solid roster, but boy, they need to add two or three players, a corner. They need to come out of the draft with a starting corner.
Yeah.
So, again, I like where the Colts are, but they've got to be right on the players they re-signed, which I agree with most of them. And, again, if they had signed Daniel Hunter, two or three of these guys wouldn't have been re-signed.
Yeah.
That's just a fact of the cap. But it's so much is on the quarterback and the running back and then everybody else having another good year.
I think you make a great point with just players who are difference makers and big playmakers. Like, you look at teams in the past and teams that have gone on further than other teams, it just seems like there's one or two players that make one or two plays every once in a while, and it's the same players over and over again. You look to a couple, like, within the last decade, with the Texans, and it was J.J. Watt. And like they had,
he was going to make three or four plays every game.
They had a fine defense and they had a fine team. But the reason they were 12-4 and not 10-6 every year was because of J.J. Watt, or maybe because not 9-7. You know what I'm saying? Like, he made plays to win two or three games consistently every year, and that puts you in better position in the playoffs. And then, of course, you're in the playoffs, and he in that position can make those plays himself too. Like in the Colts in the past, of course, it was Peyton and Marvin on offense, and then it was Robert and Dwight Freeney on defense. Exactly. Like you can have a solid roster and not be at that level. So you say the Colts have a solid roster, and in many ways I agree with you. But who's, when you're going up against teams also that have pretty good rosters or solid rosters, if you want to put it at that level themselves, and two or three more difference-making players, like who do you take at the end of the day?
If you're a defensive coordinator playing the Colts, don't you just say we can't let Taylor beat us?
Right.
Do you say we can't let Michael Pittman beat us?
No, you put it completely on his shoulder. You put it completely on Anthony Richardson's shoulders.
If I'm a coordinator, I say I'm going to give Pittman 10 for 105. Mm-hmm. I will, and he's going to make plays. He will make plays. That's why that's another player. I think they're anticipating taking another step with the quarterback. Even if Flacco plays, these quarterbacks are more suited to what they want to get from Pittman and Pierce. I wouldn't be putting a ton of, boy, if we can just get Pierce going. I can't do that.
Right, I can't either, but I would love to.
That's one that if it happens, it happens. Mm-hmm. But, again, I just think, and I've talked to Rick Venturi a lot about this, he calls them ambient players. Who do you spend a couple days during the week preparing for? And for the Colts right now, it's to me, it's the young quarterback who has played four games and the running back.
So those are your guys right now, Matt.
Yeah, and I mean – I'm kind of with Chap. I like the Colts guys. I like their roster in general, and I think they've got some good depth and stuff. But it's just like there are a lot of he's good, but guys on this roster. And that means Quiddy Pay. Yeah, he's good, but is he consistent? Can he come off the edge? Michael Pittman Jr., yeah, he's good, but can he get downfield and become a game breaker that can just bust your game wide open? And the ambient player for them, as Chap pointed out, really on the offense is JT, and the Colts really hope it'll be Richardson, because if that happens, then that really does open things up. But that is a lot to ask of a guy who we only saw in a handful of games
Then you can almost live with Pittman being who he is. Oh, yes, you want more. And we may be sitting here in January when Pitt's got 110 catches for 1,500 yards and all this, and hopefully that happens. But if you can get a couple of dynamic players, you know, quarterback and running back, then other players don't have to be quite that dynamic. They still need a dynamic receiver. They just do. Maybe the draft gives them that. I don't know. But, again, you can like where a roster is, but realize, like Ballard told the media in Orlando, the owners' meetings, we have work to do. And we'll get to, you know, they re-sign one of their own again, but they've still got issues at receiver. When they're talking about, well, you know, we've got Ashton Doolin coming back for our fourth receiver. Oh, good for Ashton.
Well, that's great. Good for you. The Texans have Stephon Diggs
coming in. Right. So that's what I'm saying. And they really like their tight end room. There's no dynamic tight end in that room. There's some good players.
There's some good players, but.
But whenever Peyton early in his career, yeah, he throws for 4,000 yards and 30 touchdowns. But, you know, until you win that first playoff game, there's that big butt under your name, and that's where this team is right now.
We should continue, finish up the AFC South with the Jacksonville Jaguars as well, who they signed wide receiver Gabe Davis, who kind of fills in for the Calvin Ridley spot who left. They traded a sixth-round pick to the Patriots for Mac Jones to be the backup quarterback to Trevor Lawrence out there. Also signed safety Darnell Savage, defensive lineman Eric Armstead, who's been a pretty good player in San Francisco the past couple years. Also signed center Mitch Morse to hopefully anchor that offensive line a little bit better than it has been in the past couple of years. Also franchise tagged the other Josh Allen. And like I said, lost
Calvin
Ridley.
Who's a pretty good Josh Allen.
Right,
in his
exactly.
own right.
Yeah, right. He's pretty darn good himself. A good dynamic edge rusher that you say.
I was looking at Trevor Lawrence. We talk about players on or quarterbacks on the rookie contract. He still is. This is his fourth year, I believe.
Yes.
He counts $11 million. They've not done the fifth-year option. They do that this year.
Right.
In May,
by May.
Which is probably going to be $25 million. I don't know what it is for a quarterback.
Oh, boy, I don't know. I'd have to look it up, but I'm sure it's big.
That's I'm probably understating it.
Yeah.
And then they get into the four-year, a zillion dollars, you know, because right. You're going to give him $50 million. You have to.
That's the going rate.
That's what. Yeah. Is he worth that?
It was how Daniel Jones made $40 million last year.
Right. Right. So
like Trevor Lawrence,
and that's one thing
they've
got. You know, go back to Houston with Stephon Diggs. They've got him for the next 3 years, I believe, at $19 million. That's going to be a steal.
Yep.
For a top 10 receiver.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the window will change for Jacksonville when all of a sudden they've got their quarterback. And I assume instead of him playing, he won't play in that fifth-year option. I guess that's when you'll do the long-term deal.
Next offseason they have to do the deal.
And again, you can do these long-term deals for the mega millions to where the first year or two are livable. And then you know, it gets
– Eventually you
get
to pay.
Bill comes due.
But I would rather have the headache of having – how am I going to pay my quarterback $50 million? Well – if he's that good, you find a way,
right?
And then we talked, then you have deficiencies elsewhere,
mm-hmm. and you try to build through the draft there and get some good young players to fill in some spots. Yes.
And every 4 years, you kind of retool those players, but you know, so at some point soon, the Jaguars will have that quarterback issue. But that's a great issue to have.
I'll tell you who doesn't have a quarterback issue. At backup quarterback.
Who?
The Kansas City Chiefs.
That's it.
They do not have a backup quarterback issue.
C-Dub.
Or a starting quarterback issue.
So he could be a two-time
Super Bowl winner. Carson Wentz himself going on a one-year deal to the Kansas City Chiefs.
Without playing in either game.
Exactly. How about that? Well, maybe he plays in the next one. Maybe he gloriously leads them to triumph.
Or it's 45-10 and he goes in for the last series and kneels three times.
There you go. Perfect.
Storybook ending.
Exactly. but yeah, it appears that the Kansas City Chiefs have signed Carson Wentz to be the backup quarterback
Since you put that genie out of the bottle,
mm-hmm.
isn't he at a point in his career where he is that late offseason signing backup until he gets the chance to prove that that's not who he is?
Sure seems like it, yeah.
And it's going to take – someone mentioned this on the radio, and they said, well, what would it take? It would take, in my mind, a Joe Flacco December
mm-hmm.
to where somebody, you know, heaven forbid, gets hurt. I'm not saying Mahomes. You know, next year, somebody else.
It would be him because that's the situation
because that's where it is. And he comes in and just plays lights out for December.
Goes 3-1 down the stretch, you know.
Just put him in place of Flacco. He went 4-1 and won games and then, of course, flamed out in the playoffs. But that's what it's going to take. It's going to take an unfortunate situation with a starter and then he to come in and play well.
Mm-hmm.
And then somebody's going to say, Gardner Minshew type of thing to where all of a sudden you've got a different label on you. So.
And what about Baker Mayfield? I mean, he comes in for the Rams 2 years ago.
Has he been on four teams now? Four teams?
The Rams, the Bucks, the Browns who he started with. Was there another one in there? I don't know. Did he play for the Panthers?
I think he played for the
Panthers. Yeah, he played for the Panthers. Yeah. That's right. So four teams now, yeah. But he's found a home in Tampa.
Time and place.
Yep, exactly. So we'll see if he can
But this really needs to be the last time we talk about CW.
What? What do you mean? It'll be the last time next time, chap.
You're going to need a real good reason to work him into our conversation because
I only bring him up when he's relevant. I really do.
Well, he's relevant because he got signed to be a backup quarterback for a quarterback who
should never not be on the field.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah.
Nice use of double.
I'm just
negative.
Saying there better be a darn good reason to bring up CW moving forward.
I promise there will be a good reason the next time that
Colts don't play
KC
either, should do they? So thank goodness.
Unfortunately, not. Well, really, the Colts actually played the Chiefs pretty well over the past couple years. They actually have a decent record against them.
Playoffs.
Ooh, boy. The plot thickens.
Playoffs?
Finally.
Playoffs.
Finally a playoff appearance. Oh, my goodness. That would be so. Anyway, no, we don't need to dwell on that. What we can dwell on for a bit is the Colts signing their final free agent from last year. So all the free agents.
He is their final. He's
yes,
the last guy.
The final one. All the free agents the Colts had last year have either re-signed with them or elsewhere. Because Julian Blackman has agreed to a deal with the Colts, went into the market, did a couple tours, looked here and there. No one was offering what Blackman wanted. And so he signs a one-year deal back here in Indy and is probably hopeful that next year the safety market will not be so bloated as it is this year with a bunch of players who were released, veteran guys who were looking for deals themselves. So teams just weren't paying big money for young safeties.
I thought he got, was it 7.7 maximum value?
7.7 max, 3.2 minimum, something like that.
3.2 or 4 million guaranteed. So it's probably worth like a $5 million deal. I'm sure the incentives are play time and all that.
Play time, Pro Bowls, maybe.
It's timing. This was a bad time for a safety with some injury issues. I'm not, the shoulder was not a linger. I mean, that was a minor thing in his history. But now, we said this maybe last week, this is a perfect situation for him to come back and play. He knows the system. They're gonna feature him. And if he's going to have a big year, a prove-it year, this was the best place for it to be.
Yep. I've said before how much I love safety play, because I grew up watching Brian Dawkins in Philadelphia. And I'm not comparing Julian Blackman to Brian Dawkins, but I will say that he was the best safety on the team last year, undeniably so, with 4 interceptions. And the last couple weeks of the season, especially the last week of the season, when the Texans were able to beat the Colts and make the playoffs.
Middle of the field, wide open.
Way too many deficiencies in the secondary.
Well, he missed the last 2 games of that shoulder.
Yep. So I think Colts fans should be happy to have him back. Let's see.
I don't know if that means they don't sign a veteran safety.
I still think he is their veteran now.
I think the secondary still needs some help.
I'm
still not that high on Rodney Thomas, who played his way out of the lineup.
Mm-hmm.
Nick Cross, I wouldn't mind being my third guy. I wouldn't mind bringing in a veteran safety, another 1 year.
Rodney McLeod type.
5-year contract. Well, I think you're going to get a really good safety.
Yeah.
For the low prices, because the big money is gone. It's out.
People have spent it already.
People, it's one of the reasons, again, when the Colts didn't get Daniel Hunter, then they pivoted to re-signing their own.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't wait. I won't be surprised if they still sign a veteran safety.
No, me neither. But it's not a foregone conclusion like the Michael Pittman move was, you know?
No, and it's not as glaring of a need now. Maybe you can get a safety in the 4th round. I don't know. But
at that point, like, you're just resetting the dial, you know, because so that's what you did with Nick Cross. Yeah. And that's what you did with Rodney Thomas in the 7th round. So, you could make an argument either way, because Blackman's going to be there now. He's going to be your strong safety. Who's going to be your free safety? Is it going to be Nick Cross or Rodney Thomas? Is it going to be a veteran? Maybe you go through some of your offseason, your March, your April, your May, and then in June. Maybe, because that's the time I think they signed Mike Adams back in 2014 or 2015, whatever it was.
The first day of their mandatory minicamp, the last 3 days.
Exactly. And
2-time Pro Bowler.
And we're in a position right now that could happen again. You could get a veteran safety at that point, because that's what it seems like is happening to safeties this specific offseason. So if I'm Chris Ballard in this situation, I don't feel any sense of urgency to get a deal done at safety. Like, you could still have that in the back of your mind, like, well, yeah, maybe we sign someone later this year as possible. But right now, like, I don't think he's just like, oh, we need to sign someone else to get alongside Julian Blackman.
Blackman does ease the need a little bit.
You can see if Nick Cross is taking that next step through these first couple months of offseason.
And he's still a young player.
Exactly.
Very young player.
They signed him. He was 20 years old, right, when he was drafted. So take a breath, take a beat. And then in 3 months, reassess everything.
But the other team's doing these deals, and it makes it hard for the Colts fans to say, patience now, patience.
Yep. And I think you could say patience a little bit more with safety, though.
No question.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? That's not the game-breaking. That's not the Stephon Diggs. That's not the big money corner edge rusher or wide receiver that would get everyone all hot and bothered.
And the Colts have been kind of the king of the let's sign a guy in June. On paper, kind of unexciting free agent, and it tends to work out well for them.
88 tackles for Blackman last year. Also had 2 fumble recoveries, defended 8 passes.
All of his numbers were career best.
Yes, it was, in 15 games. And he was healthy for the vast majority of the year, up until the last 2 weeks when he hurt his shoulder there. So Julian Blackman is back, and he will be the anchor at the back end of the secondary. Let's see here. Exceeding financial expectations, at least. The performance-based bonuses. There's a system in the NFL that gives out performance-based bonuses at the end of the year. And Will Fries at guard and safety Rodney Thomas were actually among the top 25 players in the NFL in performance-based bonuses. And I can't tell you exactly what goes into this.
It's play time. Going along with what your salary was, that you outperformed your contract.
Yeah, they they sort of weight it based on like your salary and your playing time.
Everybody gets something. Right. Peyton Manning used to get a check for like, you know, $40.
Right, because his salary was already sky high, but so his performance base,
so his
take salary next to playing time was not all that
big. Each team gets a pool. All the teams get a pool, and then it's divided amongst them based on a formula. And there was an example on the NFL's website, and it made my head explode, so I didn't try to explain it.
If you spend time on that and try to explain it to people, you are crazy.
Right, that sounds like a Joe Hopkins thing, our former producer here, that would have been able to explain it to all of us.
To him.
Yeah, I'm sure it would have,
It's like talking to your insurance guy when he talks and you nod your head, and then when he leaves, you think, I had no idea what he said.
What did he say? But what Will Fries and Rodney Thomas had going for them last year as starters the entire year basically was they were both seventh-round picks. So they're in that rookie contract where your rookie seventh-round pick salary is not very much.
It's a league minimum for your experience.
Right, so you play the entire year, and you start the entire year, and you have that seventh-round pick salary, then you're going to get a big bump in performance-based incentives. So Will Fries was the 12th most with $810,000 bonus. Thomas was the 18th biggest performance-based bonus with $769,000. The highest bonus went to Ravens guard John Simpson, who earned $974,000. He was a fourth-round pick who played on the one-year minimum. He was a fourth-round pick in 2020, I should say, who played on the one-year minimum, all but seven snaps on offense. And I actually saw this. Matt didn't note this, but Aaron Rodgers got a performance-based bonus.
Everybody gets something.
For his like three or four plays that he played in the Jets season, it was like $40.17.
Can you imagine getting that in the mail and $40? And
it was awesome.
Voids after 60 days
exactly.
or whatever.
You better deposit this right here. I think you just you put that in a glass case and put it up on your wall and just remember, the good old days of getting the $40 performance-based bonus. But yeah, this program has been in place for like 20, 22 years now, and it definitely benefits players with lower salaries and high playing time. So kudos to the Colts who made that list.
So Will Fries essentially doubled his salary.
Yes.
With this bonus, and it was very, very close to doing the same thing for Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to note that.
Okay. Props to both of them. Definitely earned it with how much they played. Off-season dates looking ahead, we are just about 10 days or so, a little bit more, almost 2 weeks away from the first day of off-season.
April 15th.
Yes, off-season work. So they come together as a team, and you can do very limited work there at Colts headquarters.
First 2 weeks.
The first couple weeks, and then it gets a little bit more expansive.
Phase one, strength conditioning, 2 weeks, and then it's 3 weeks of on-field individual positioning, not offense versus defense, and then you get into whatever it is, 4 weeks of football.
Of OTAs, really, is what that.
And they've got nine. I think you're allowed 10. They've got nine on-field football practices.
Yep. So that's all coming up. And then, of course, the draft. I mean, we talk so much about free agency and how that impacts teams. But, I mean, look at what the Houston Texans did last year in the draft. And you can see how important the end of this month is going to be toward what teams are next year, too. Like, we're focusing on free agency, understandably so, because that's what we're looking at right now. You know, that's the tangible thing that we can analyze and we can break down at this moment. But what the Colts are able to do in this draft will go a long way in determining what exactly they're going to be next year. Do they get those dynamic playmakers like the Texans were able to get last year and take a significant, more than expected step forward? It's not just going to be relying on Anthony Richardson and Jonathan Taylor, even though those are the two guys right now that you can look at this Colts roster and see that they're putting a big onus. The Colts are putting a big onus on those two players.
No other way to read it than that.
No, there isn't. But is there someone else that they get in this draft that can make that surprising step forward? Is there a Samson Nakua in the fifth round that comes out and gets whatever it is? Puka Nakua. Samson was his I think he has a brother. But anyway, Puka Nakua who comes out and is
set all
just
kind
complete,
of rookie records.
Yeah, complete stud, surprisingly so.
And he caught a pass when the Colts opted not to cover him.
Yeah, that was Juju and Kenny decision. Moore. One of those two didn't cover him. And I
thought
don't know
you
exactly
had him.
Yeah, that was not the best play of the Colts season. That point.
But maybe next week we can go into the Colts' biggest areas of needs.
Yeah.
And I keep going back and forth on corner and receiver,
mm-hmm.
and I keep defaulting on giving Richardson every possibility, right. Every reason to succeed. So I would err on the side of going receiver at 15. But they need to start in corners bad.
And I look around and I see so many different like national guys putting together mock drafts, and almost all of them have a corner. It just
a
seems
lot of
like just,
they're selling on Quinyon Mitchell.
Quinyon Mitchell, yeah. and because you look at, and we'll get into this, I think, much more in the weeks to come. But they just look at the Colts roster and like, well, I mean, they have Pittman, yeah. Well, right? So I guess it's corner is what
one
they
guy's
toward.
Got him taking the defensive tackle from Texas. Is it Murphy?
Yeah, Byron Murphy.
And they say, well, because Buckner's in the last year of his contract, and they're not going to re-sign him.
I don't know about that.
I wouldn't be so sure.
Yeah, I wouldn't go.
Buckner will be
far.
Like 31, and I tell you,
yeah.
I've not seen an iota of drop-off. Now, it's going to cost
some money.
20-some million yeah. per year to re-sign mm-hmm. him, and Buck's not going to give
a hometown discount.
Because, first of all, it's not his hometown.
Right, exactly.
But... It's everything is linked together, but it'll be really interesting what they do, and they're going to trade back. You know they are.
Mm-hmm, exactly. That's the thing. They're not going to pick
a 15. Got to get that extra fifth round pick.
Right. Exactly. So you have that ammunition to make the trade in the future for the Stephon Diggs that the Bills made to be able to send a fifth round pick in like 8 years to the Texans for.
We need to have that NBA type contract where it's.
A 2032 first round pick. I'm like, are you kidding me?
This planet may be gone in 2031.
Yeah, that's really optimistic to think that we're still going to be here in 2031, 2032.
I will say for the NFL, at least when it comes to the draft compensation stuff, it does not make your head explode. The NBA, when you try to read an NBA trade.
And when players walk the stage, they can actually use the hat that the team that they're going to. That's pretty helpful as well. You know, I like that.
That would be nice.
I know. All the fun stuff. But anyway, much more draft talk coming over the next couple weeks.
One more rabbit hole to go down. When is the WNBA draft? Is it next week?
I think that's in a couple weeks. I thought it was later this summer. Maybe it is in April, actually. Maybe it's soon after.
Cool.
Because, it's going to be in New York City. I think we're planning on going because we have to. With this number one pick, it's Caitlin Clark. I'm pretty sure we're going to have someone there.
I saw the Iowa LSU game.
It can't be next
drew
week.
12 million
yep.
viewers.
Yep.
And it was
more than every NBA Finals game last year except one. How about that?
It's unbelievable.
Yep.
Their website says it's the 15th of April.
Are you serious?
I thought it was coming up.
So it's the first same as
tax day OTAs and the
exactly.
WNBA draft.
Yeah, get your taxes
it's
in.
It's like Colts have their pro day Monday on Eclipse Day. What kind of scheduling is that?
Jeez, that's going to be madhouse. So and it's the same day as maybe Purdue plays in the national championship as
that's
well.
At night. That'll start at like 10:15.
Oh yeah, exactly. Yeah, we're gonna have to be up well past midnight to see what happens in that one. So anyway, that'll wrap us up for this Colts Blue Zone podcast. You can follow us online at Colts Blue Zone on Twitter. Mike Chappell is at mchappell51. Matt is at Statamatty, and I'm Dave Griffiths at DaveG_sports. You can follow Mike Chappell's work on Fox59.com and CBS4Indy.com as well. And we will see you next week as the draft gets 1 week closer on the Colts Blue Zone podcast.